The special shortcast of the Tova Pod comes off the back of our bumper mortgage episode that was all about the people. The homeowners making tough decisions because interest rates and the cost of living are forcing them to, and which featured an extended and candid interview with the Chief Executive of KiwiBank, Steve Jerkovich. We wanted to explore the issue even further, so this is about where we are, how we got there, and where to from here. Drilling into the state of the property market with a property economist and what the change of a government and its recent policy changes could mean for first home buyers and investors. We also sit down with Dr. Alan Bollard, the former Reserve Bank Governor, to better understand the thinking that drives the decisions which determine our interest rates. Let's take a look at the housing market diagnosis and prognosis. Is there relief in sight? With us now is Calvin Davidson. He's the Chief Property Economist at CoreLogic. Thanks very much for coming on, Calvin. I appreciate it.
No worries.
We saw house prices peak in late 2021, then plummet. What are they doing now? What's the latest?
We're seeing the emerging signs of an upturn. It's pretty slow and it's patchy. It's been underway for maybe 4 or 5 months, but yeah, momentum's not really building. It does vary from month to month and across regions. And I think that's just consistent with the big pressures on the market, such as high mortgage rates, stretched affordability. We've got more listings coming on now, so there's a lot more choice for buyers. And so, yeah, there was a sense at the end of last year that it was a slight seller's market, so there's a bit more pressure on prices. I think we've probably moved into a buyer's market now, so that's just dampening those price pressures a bit.
And what's it like for first home buyers?
Well, actually, pretty good. Now, there are some caveats here. So if you look at it in terms of market share, then first home buyers are actually running at a record high, 26% of activity going to first home buyers. Now, I've been tapping KiwiSaver, using low deposit allowances at the banks. On the flip side, investors have been a bit quieter. So that is, I guess, creating a bit more opportunity for first home buyers because a bit less competition. You do also have to acknowledge that this is in a relatively quiet market. So yes, market share is high, but the number of deals going to first home buyers has been higher in the past as well.
And you say not a lot of activity there from investors. Are you expecting that to change with the change of government and the policy shifts like a return to interest deductibility?
To put the short answer out there straight away, I don't think so. And yet the vibe is changing. You can look at things like rents are rising, interest deductibility coming back. LVRs are set to loosen probably in the middle of the year. Brightline tests getting shorter. Tenancy laws have shifted back in favour of landlords a little bit more. So there's certainly reasons why you'd think people would start to think about investing again. But I think there's a big difference between your mood or feeling more positive about it and actually doing it. And I think when a typical mum and dad investor rocks up now and says, okay, well, if I bought that exact house, what's it going to cost me in terms of the mortgage? What size debt am I going to have? What interest rates are? What rental returns am I going to get? Actually, those sums are still quite hard to stack up. Simply, rental yields are low. Mortgage rates are high. So in other words, the rent is not covering your mortgage by any means. A standard rental property now is probably being topped up a new investment by $300 or $400 a week at least. So some investors will come back, but will it be a flood? I don't think so.
And worth noting as well, isn't it, that when the Prime Minister talks about downward pressure on rents as a result of those interest deductibility changes and other changes, it's not actually rents going down, is it?
I mean, you have to be very careful about the language. Perhaps there's some sort of political spin in there to try and use the right words that maybe mask the truth. But yeah, I don't think rents will fall. You don't tend to see rents fall. They're more related to tenants' wages and just general supply and demand than they are to landlords' costs. So, you know, landlords either make a bit of margin or they take a hit depending on how their costs are going. Really, the market sets the rent, not kind of landlords themselves. So, yeah, I don't think we'll see rents fall, but it may just slow the rate of increase. We'll never know because we won't know what it would have been without these changes.
And from what you're saying, so with the changes to the Brightline test, which may, you know, the government reducing it from 10 years to 2 years so that people can effectively flip their properties without paying a capital gains tax after 2 years, are you saying that's not going to have any kind of great impact on the market?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it all adds up to a cocktail of factors that are more favourable for investors, and you could see some starting to think about it again, maybe even taking the plunge. Certainly, if you have a reduced chance of paying capital gains tax, well, that might make you look at the market again, and we know that is going to be coming middle of the year. But I think also there's a couple of other things. It could bring forward some selling as well. So some investors currently really struggling with cash flow might go, you know what, I'm going to be off capital gains tax sooner than I thought. So, hey, I'll sell. So maybe some buying. but also some selling. And also what doesn't change is high mortgage rates. I think at the moment that's really the hurdle for investors. You can talk about tax bills and tenancy laws, but really it's about mortgage rates. And until they fall, it's simply going to be quite hard from that cash flow perspective. Even if you want to invest, it's still going to be quite tricky. So, yep, some changes, but until mortgage rates fall, that's the big change.
And because of those kind of stubbornly high mortgage rates, are we seeing an increase in people going into arrears or in the worst case scenarios defaulting on their mortgages?
There has been a slight uptick. I mean, we've certainly seen that across a range of indicators in the past maybe 2 or 3 months. That's across consumer debt, housing debt. There is signs of stress there, but not seeing very many mortgage sales, certainly far, far less than what they were at the peak of the GFC. So yes, the growth is up, but look at where it's starting from, very low level. And there's been a number of factors, but I think the key thing's been the labour market. People have been in work. People have still got income. I think that's the thing that's kept really these payment stress levels quite low.
And should anyone realistically be expecting a return to the halcyon days of mortgage rates with twos in front of them, particularly those people who bought in the peak of the market? Will we ever end up back there?
In terms of mortgage rates going back into the twos, very, very unlikely. There was a crisis scenario. Can't rule out anything in this new world, and we might face some other crisis, but you know, central scenario has to be that mortgage rates don't go back to that kind of level. We might see the official cash rate settling at somewhere around 4, somewhere around there. So a mortgage rate might be 5.5, something like that, as a sort of long run average.
Kelvin, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Key to it all, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. The bank sets our official cash rate and any changes flow through to the interest rates high street banks impose on mortgages. Basically, if the OCR goes up, your mortgage repayments will too. It is a vastly more complex science, art, economic calculation to reach those root decisions, and one our next guest knows better than most. Former Reserve Bank Governor Alan Bollard was in the hot seat during the global financial crisis of 07-08, and as New Zealand charted its way out of it. Welcome to the pod, Dr. Bollard. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you explain to people the OCR track over the last few years, why it dropped so low, giving homeowners those insanely rosy interest rates, and then why we went full throttle up again in the opposite direction?
Yeah, well, when I was governor back in the days of the global financial crisis, we had much higher rates in those days. And I mean, we had something like, it was over 8%, so it was quite high. And then we had to reduce those very, very rapidly when the global financial crisis happened. We picked the timing roughly right, and we dropped them considerably, and they went down around 3%. Then we've been on a growth track since then, inflation generally being contained, nothing too much. And then, of course, COVID hit. And COVID, we've got to remember, COVID was a very unusual sort of shock, a very big economic shock. Really made a difference to both the economy and the statistics and what we know about the economy. Never been there before, never seen what it was going to be like. And not surprisingly, the Reserve Bank was very worried about what might happen to the economy under lockdown. So they cut interest rates very significantly. They cut them right down to 0.25%. We'd never been anywhere like that before. So we were in very new territory. I mean, looking back, fiscal policy was very important. So government put out a lot of spending very quickly during that time, and that was probably roughly right. Monetary policy turned out not really to have the role from hindsight that we might have thought. So we came out of that strange period with expecting to have real problems on unemployment, and quite the opposite happened. We had very strong employment, very strong, very tight labour markets. And so suddenly rates were far too low.
With no one coming into the country.
Yeah, rates were far too low for too long. I mean, it happened around a whole bunch of countries. It wasn't just New Zealand. Easy to say after the event. Couldn't really tell that at the time. And so rates have gone up since then, a bit slower than they might have gone up, but nevertheless they have. They're having an impact. They haven't quite got there yet.
And what lessons did you learn from the GFC? And do you think that we have suitably applied those lessons, and if we could, during that next major global, or that most recent global shock, COVID, and what we're going through now post-COVID?
Well, I learned from military strategists like Clausewitz about phrases like the fog of war. You don't mm-hmm. exactly know what's happening until mm-hmm. after the event and the whole battlefield clears. And there was stuff happening during that time that we could see was bad, it was worrying, but we couldn't exactly work out how it was going to work out. New Zealand's in a bit of the forefront of that because we were the first financial markets to open every day. So some of those battles would be fought out in New Zealand's stock market. But after the event, you start to see it was, in that case, it was a financial crisis, but it was also quite a big economic slowdown. It took quite a while for me, and I think for most other people, to really work out what had happened. So during COVID, you've got a different sort of event. It's worrying, it's big, it's very negative, but you're also saying, we don't really understand. We've got these statistics. Couldn't really believe them through that period because you know, people were behaving in quite different ways. They were saving quite a lot. They weren't spending that much, but labour markets still stayed very tight. So you put off what decisions you can, and you say, in this case, the Reserve Bank, what about if we've got it wrong? What negative effect will that have? What about if we go too fast, too slow, too high, too low, and try and work out something in between?
And do you think there was any other way? I know you don't want to make any judgments on the decisions of other governors, but are there more ways to skin a cat? Could there have been an option that didn't see inflation wind up as high as it did?
Yeah, but they're not very good options. So the obvious one was quantitative easing, and the bank sort of flirted with that. But that's untested stuff, and you don't want to go there unless you really have to. People don't entirely understand it, and all the time you've got to pull back from that exposure that you get at some stage. So while it might be easy enough for the bank to get in and do quantitative easing, at some stage it's got to do quantitative tightening to get its balance sheets back into order, and that's much harder and slower and causes its own damage. So you wouldn't do it unless you had to. Then there was stuff around the banking system, but I mean, actually the banks were pretty good through the COVID crisis.
We've spoken to a lot of people on this podcast who are doing okay, they had the buffer, but then life throws you curveballs and interest rates, they can be that tipping point. Do those people, do those stories, do they weigh on the minds of governors when they're making those big decisions around the OCR?
Well, governors are human beings, and of course they listen to that sort of thing and look at it, and they definitely don't want to cause damage, but they're more inclined to look at the overall statistics and say, how many people are there in that sort of category? How many are at risk? How many are now taking preventative action and slowing down their other expenditures? How many might not be taking out loans because they're worried about what's going to happen in the future? But on the other hand, how many are still being held out of that housing market because house prices are so high and costs are so great and are suffering from inflation in other ways? So they'll be looking at the totals, not the individual stories.
Do you think that the government's upcoming tax cuts risk being inflationary?
I don't know enough about them, about what's actually going to happen, to be able to say that. They need to look at that possibility, but I can't answer that.
And where to from, well, actually just on those people, is there more that we can be, and you touched on this before, but is there more that we can be doing that for them from a central bank perspective or a retail bank perspective or a policy political perspective? Is there more that we can be doing to help those people, or is there an argument that the market rules?
Well, a big argument at the minute has been that when the new government came in, they changed the arrangements in the monetary policy remit to say to the Reserve Bank, stop looking at employment as well as inflation, just look at inflation. Now, most economists think that's the right move, to just look at inflation, because you're there in the Reserve Bank, you're setting the price of money effectively with the OCR. You know it will impact inflation. Can you impact employment? Yeah, in the short term, but not in the long term, most economists would say. And of course, what happened coming out of COVID was the Reserve Bank was sitting there saying, well, we have to look at employment. We don't know what's going to happen. We think it might be hit quite bad. It might be fragile. And therefore, we better keep these rates low. And in doing that for a little bit longer than they probably otherwise would have with a simpler inflation-only remit, by doing that, they arguably let inflation get higher than it was going to otherwise. Now, I'm saying that from hindsight, easy to do, harder at the time, but that'll be my broad take.
Yeah, the fog of war, the fog of COVID. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Bollard. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Very grateful. Thanks.
Thank you.
For more on that story and more, check out my articles and analysis on stuff.co.nz. But for now, that's all from us. Thanks for listening. Ka kite.
Keeping politicians on their toes takes work. Please support us at stuff.co.nz/contribute.